Welcome to ATS Mix.
And I think until you start asking questions, you know, you're just going to buy whatever's offered to you on the 6 o'clock news.
ATS Mix.
This isn't a talk show, it's a freak show.
From AboveTopSecret.com.
But also be skeptical of the people who are out there selling conspiracy theories.
The Internet's most popular conspiracy theory discussion board. ATS Mix from AboveTopSecret.com.
In the name of Christ, just let us in!
Starts now.
I'm Johnny Anonymous.
And I am Dave Rabbit. And John, I just have one question for you. Do you believe, brother, that the king for the Burger King commercials, do you think he may be a little light in his loafers? And the reason why I say that is he's putting money in guys' pants now. What's up with that? I don't know. Something strange. Anyway, we've got to get into this thing. We've got the UFO traditional sightings from around the world.
And then we have a very special, special episode featuring Stephen Melzer, better known as Cracker, and Bill Irvin, the CEO, as we talk about the $700 billion bailout of the economy.
Wow, let's get to it.
This is ATS Mix.
What? Whoa, whoa, what am I hearing?
What is this?
From AboveTopSecret.com.
Oh, crap!
Here are your anomalous sightings
from around the world.
Here are the latest U.S. UFO sightings for AboveTopSecret.com. In Miami, a large oval-shaped pattern of blue-red flashing lights with white strobe lights was spotted hovering over a tree line. The pattern of light suggested a very large object was hovering stationary over the ground. Large blue and red flashing lights were observed around the perimeter of the object along with the white strobes. The lights flashed in some sort of intermittent or undefined pattern, with the white strobes defining an outline, and the red and blue lights flashing within the outline. Another object was spotted very high up in the air, perhaps at 20 to 30,000 feet or more, flying just south of the object. The object appeared to be hovering at an altitude of maybe a couple of thousand feet to at most 3,000 feet. The size of the object would have been hand-sized, with a hand held at arm's length minus the thumb. In Indiana, a viewer stated it was around 6:20 a.m., still dark out, clear skies with a moon three-quarter full. I was sitting there and saw a bright light out of the corner of my eye through the shears behind the couch. It was moving. I pulled back the shears to see a large craft moving somewhat slowly directly over my house and on past the tree canopy and back where I could no longer see it. It was low. I'm not good with feet or miles, but it was low enough to light up my backyard from all the lights that were around it. At first, it was very pointed on the very front, one large bright white light on the very tip. As it moved over, I saw that it was triangular and had no wings. The white light continued along and down both sides and also the back. In the middle of the back end, it had two small red lights on either side of some kind of vent. It looked man-made to me, but it was something I've never seen. No sound at all, and flying so low it should have rattled my whole house. All the lights were steady burning. None blinked. I could see the bottom well in its details. I knew it would disappear over the trees too fast for me to grab my camera, so I just took it in as much detail as possible. It looked metallic, gray, or was it silver? The bottom was contoured and not smooth. It looked like vents on the bottom also. This is David C., for AboveTopSecret.com.
This is Tamril from Godbox Cafe with sightings from across Canada. In Kelowna, British Columbia, at approximately 8:25 p.m., a witness with family in tow saw a very bright glowing silvery white object hovering in the sky. It then quickly flew over the mountains in a northwesterly direction. It appeared to have a smaller object hovering alongside to the upper right of it. That same evening, at around 10:30 p.m., on the Atlantic side, in Sydney, Nova Scotia, a witness who is a business traveler and was staying in Sydney to help a friend move into her apartment noticed across the bay three very large and fast-moving orange-red lights sweeping across the sky back and forth as though they were playing a fast game of keep away. As a visitor to this area, the witness was amazed by the sight, and a local resident who was helping with the move was quoted as saying, "Yeah, yeah, you live around here long enough and those things aren't even interesting anymore." Surprised by this attitude, the witness commented that people in this region had become blasé about these events, as no one outside their town believed they occur. The next night, at 11 p.m. in Windsor, Ontario, under clear skies, a witness happened to look up to spy a bright oval-shaped object moving slowly at a fairly low altitude across the sky, then picked up a tremendous amount of speed, and with a flash of light, simply vanished. all in a matter of 4 to 5 seconds. This is Tamaril from Godbox Cafe, keeping my eyes to the skies for AboveTopSecret.com.
Are you ready for a close encounter of the third kind? Well, so are we. Hi, everyone. Dave Rabbit here with the ATS Mix Show from AboveTopSecret.com. My partner, Johnny Anonymous, is waist-deep in reviewing over 120 hours of videotape that the ATS investigation team took over a period of 10 days while they were all at James Gilliland Sanctuary at Trout Lake, Washington, overlooking the beautiful Mount Adams. In addition to Mark Allen, also known as Springer, Stephen Melzer, also known as Cracker, Johnny Anonymous, also known as Johnny Anonymous, we had a very special VIP AboveTopSecret.com member that accompanied the team by the name of Ronnie Williams. And in case you're one of the few people who live your life underneath a huge rock, Robbie Williams is the English singer-songwriter who has sold well over 100 million records and is in the United Kingdom Music Hall of Fame. Robbie and his crew join Mark, Stephen, and Johnny for a casual conversation about what each of them saw over a few days at the sanctuary. So if you want to hear the Robbie Williams UFO interview at Gilliland Ranch and see some of the amazing footage that was captured there by my partner, Johnny Anonymous, you can find this incredible conversation and video on the homepage of AboveTopSecret.com, the number one alternative to mainstream media for alternative topics.
And now it's time for a different view. This is the Skeptic Overview.
And it is, of course, the Skeptic Overview, and that must mean that I have on board with me Dave Rabbit, Bill Irvin, and also a special guest for this episode, the one and only CFO for AboveTopSecret.com, better known as Cracker. Hello, Stephen. How are you? And Bill?
Good. Hi. How you doing, guys?
And Bill?
I'm going to have an abbreviated part in tonight's little fun fest with you guys. I had a hell morning at the dentist on this end. You know, it's the kind of thing where you go in and before the dentist starts giving you the shot, he looks at you and goes, "This is going to be a tough one today."
Ouch.
I had a tooth that cracked from a really old filling that had gone bad. Then another one that recently had a problem with an accident. So it was time to take care of those things, and they couldn't guarantee me that a root canal would be successful. So you don't want to start a root canal and then for them to go, "You know what, this isn't working."
Right. Yeah, hopefully they gave you some good medication.
Well, you know, the numb juice, you know, the Novocaine, that's, they stuck that in. And you know you're in trouble halfway through it when the dentist steps back, you know, kind of jumps up and down and rolls his neck because he's having trouble getting them teeth out of your mouth.
Ooh.
2 hours.
Uh-oh.
2 hours later.
You didn't get the foot on the chin as he pulled?
It was very close. Actually, yes. It really was that close to that.
And was it he didn't put his foot on your groin or anything, did he?
I would have enjoyed that at the time.
Well, I know. But I mean, we
better than what was happening in my mouth.
I know, but Mrs. Overlord likes, you know, her man to be able to perform dancing-wise, so, right, you know?
So I've been going through a strict regimen of maintaining my pain through strong bourbon. And I have a window of opportunity here between doses of bourbon for me to participate with you guys tonight.
Okay, but wait a minute, John. Before we jump in here, I just got to say one thing. You know, when I go to my dentist, he plays the Birds 8 Miles High whenever he's giving the guess. So, I don't know, it's kind of a 60s flashback. And then he's got, you know, all the chicks are kind of dressed up in the little, you know, short shorts. It's a fun dentist office, not compared to yours, I'm sure, Bill.
Are you sure that was the dentist?
Maybe it wasn't. Maybe it wasn't. All right,
the telltale sign is when you come out of it, if your shirt's untucked and your pants are undone.
Well, I'm sorry. I guess that wasn't the dentist office, was it?
Yeah, dentists don't have tukas.
Oh, I think it was Vegas. Maybe it was Vegas. Okay, I was having a flashback. All right, well, I know you don't feel good, so we really appreciate you soldiering on, as you like to tell us. So tell us what the hottest topic right now on AboveTopSecret.com is, and let's wrap about it.
I think everybody knows what the hot topic is today, and it has been for the past couple of days. And Stephen joined us because he's got the financial brain to provide some insights on the madness that's happening. But this bailout proposal from The guy who wants to be the CEO of the United States, Hank Paulson?
Old Bernanke?
Yeah, that's pretty much what he's looking for.
Paulson. He wants to be the CEO. Right. And I guess that would make Bernanke the CFO or something like that. But that's what the proposal would end up giving him is, I think he was on the cover, was it Newsweek he was on the cover calling him King Paulson or something, or King Henry? I think that was the title on Newsweek.
I don't read Newsweek, so
I don't follow the news.
Oh, it's just on the cover.
Let's pull little pinkies when we get a chance here, Stephen.
Yeah, right.
So it's this this crazy $700 billion bailout plan to essentially reward the crooks on Wall Street is what at the debate the last couple of days is turning out to be. Stephen, what's your spin or your take on the madness that's happening?
Well, first of all, you have to understand that I think it's sort of necessary, although the way they're going about it isn't exactly the way to do it. We're basically going from a country that invades countries to a country that invades companies, is the way I'm looking at it. The plan itself gives us above-the-law-type rights, which a little scary. We can bail out foreign companies, which is really wonderful, given that we need to do so much at home. And it's pretty much not explaining the biggest problem, and that's the CEO and the directors and whatnot and their huge salaries. It's just basically saying we'll deal with it later. And that's right. Part of the problem. And nobody's really, you know, focusing on it. I've been getting a lot of calls from clients. For the most part, they're worried about their money and is it going to be safe. But I do have clients on Wall Street. I have some clients who've lost a lot of money and some clients who are doing all right. And they're all pretty much disgusted with it. And that's really all it boils down to. And it doesn't look like it's going to go very far because it seems to me that every question that was asked today was sort of given a runaround kind of answer. And if you can't get straight answers out of the guys that drew it up, you're not going to get an approval.
Right. And this really, the plan, what has been coming out today and has been hammered on by some of the people who are analyzing this, is it's coming out that really this plan, this bailout plan, has been created by the same lobbyists and people that put us in this problem in the first place.
Exactly.
So all they're really trying to do is get out a big eraser and correct the problem and then say, okay, fixed, now let's make more money.
Yeah, you know, one thing that has to be looked at, and, you know, again, I'm not saying that the plan is great, but I'm saying something has to be done. Our government, whenever they've done these things, has never lost a dime.
Right.
The taxpayers may suffer, but the government itself will make money on any deal they make. They always do. They always will.
Now, I agree with you when you said that something needs to be done, and this, I think a lot of people don't realize the complexity of the problem that's faced when literally the credit market dries up, which has the potential of happening here. And that means that, you know, big to small companies can't get those little bridge loans that they rely on between peaks in their income to do things like pay utility bills and even pay people's salaries.
Yeah.
And if they can't get those little bridge loans that they rely upon to operate.
I'm sorry, Bill, go ahead.
Yeah, almost from quarter to quarter. I mean, there is a real problem where some companies may not be able to meet payroll. And that's the, when you get down to when people talk about from Wall Street to Main Street, that's the problem that could happen on Main Street if something doesn't happen.
Well, there's also going to be a big fallout from what's already taken place, regardless of what they do. And it should, you know, you should point out that the bailout is actually closer to $800 billion because we are buying AIG for another $85 billion.
That's right.
Which is separate from this, but it's still part of the bailout. So we're moving closer to the 800 range. But, you know,
it's actually $1.2 trillion when you add up all the Freddie Mae and Fannie Mac. And
yeah, the other ones,
Freddie
yeah.
Mac
but what people don't realize, and, you know, and again, I base my, you know, my status from my clients who are mostly in New York or in the area, and people outside of New York don't realize what's going to happen when New York actually starts to really get hit with what's going on in the rest of the world, because right now we're not suffering like everybody else is. Our economy is just now starting to take a big hit in the real estate market, and that is going to pass down, and all these people that are going to be laid off from these houses, it's going to pass down to every single level, and when New York gets hurt, the rest of the world gets hurt further. And it's a big issue that people aren't looking at. But apartment prices are starting to come down, and when they really start to come down, people aren't going to be decorating. They're not going to be hiring architects. They're not going to be redecorating and painting, and they're not going to be getting plumbers in. They're not going to be doing a lot of stuff. And the little guys are going to get hurt here, and that's going to have a major impact nationwide.
No, I got that confused the hell out of me, Stephen. You said when the apartment prices go down that this is going to take place. Is that what you said?
Well, no, I'm saying that the apartment prices are going to start to really come down here. They've already started to creep down, but the rest of the country is seeing a real estate drop. Here in New York and in the immediate area, it hasn't really taken a hit yet, primarily because these Wall Street guys are all making tons of money still. They're not anymore.
But okay, still, I got to take it a step further. What the hell does that have to do with people not wanting to paint, even though the market is going down to where apartments are cheaper? How is that affecting the small guy, other than
the landlord?
The majority of the real estate market in this area is buoyed by these guys making tons of money. They're not making it anymore. So they're not hiring the little guys to do the work that they used to do.
Okay. All right. Now,
and it's just going to pass right on down.
Okay.
Plus, if the value of the particular building will go down as the rent goes down, and the landlord may still have a very huge mortgage on that. They keep refinancing these things over and over again.
Right.
And if they can't pay the mortgage because of the rent that they're getting, and the utilities and the other big package of expensive stuff that's involved in having a building in Manhattan, you've got a problem.
Yep. Although I will say this, there have been a huge number of increased refinances going on in the last week. I haven't had a client call me about it. I haven't had a client call about a purchase in over a year. I mean, I don't do a lot of mortgages, but I do some for my clients. And I called up a friend of mine who I booked mortgages through because I had two today, and I have a third coming, and he's swamped with refinances. So it looks like the rate's coming down a little bit. People are starting to think smartly, whereas they were basically ignoring the fact that they were going to be screwed. And that's a good sign.
Well, that brings up a good point, because when we roll back the clock and look at what brought us here, I mean, really the crux of the cause of this problem are all those screwed up mortgages that found their way into mortgage-backed securities that all these firms bought up. And so we have just tons and tons of crap mortgages out there that people can't pay and that are on homes that aren't worth what they were when the mortgage began, that is really the bulk of all the bad debt causing this problem, correct?
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, prior to mortgage rates dropping the way they did maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago, something like 4% of all mortgages were unconventional, meaning adjustable rates, basically. That was it. It was either you got a fixed rate, 15-year, fixed rate, 30-year, or an adjustable rate. That was pretty much what people did, and very few people did these adjustable rate mortgages. At some point, we were over 40%. Unconventional loans, and they weren't just adjusted rates. They were things like pay-as-you-go, where if you don't have the money now, we'll just tack the principal on and you're not in default. Don't pay us.
Right.
How could somebody ever get away with that and not realize that at some point they're going to have to pay up a major amount of money when the rates change?
Well, there's two things. The banks were a lot of banks being very deceptive about the kind of package they were giving to consumers. And conversely, there are a lot of consumers buying houses who just weren't thinking and were just looking to get into the house thinking that, oh, sometime in the future, the price is going to continue to go up. We'll refinance then and we'll be okay.
A big question is, who's to blame there? Is it the real estate market itself, the brokers who've overpriced stuff so they could get bigger commissions? Is it the mortgage brokers who basically swindled a lot of their clients? Or is it the lawyers who knew what their clients were doing and didn't really help them out? Is it the banks that came up with these phony products? Or is it the government who never said a word as it was happening? And that's a huge issue, because the reality of it is someone somewhere 5, 6, 7 years ago should have said, you know what, some of these loans are going to kill people.
Right. I think it goes back to the government being the enabler of this widespread greed in several different silos that you just talked about.
I don't know if it's enabling or just not paying attention to it. Too busy worrying about things they shouldn't be worried about overseas.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's part of enabling. Yeah. It's not really noticing what's going on soon enough. So with that in mind, I have a bailout plan that I believe would work.
Okay.
Right here on ATS Mix.
Oh, boy.
Well, here it comes.
Is this $10 to Dave Rabbit thing again?
No, actually, you know what? I think I was reading in the news, and I am actually surprised that no one has mentioned something like this. And I don't know. You can tell me how serious it is. I don't think it's that wild of an idea. I mean, if you take that $700 billion and you think of a different way to apply it in a way that helps both these homeowners that are sitting on a home and they're screwed, they're about to be foreclosed, or they're behind in payments, and would also end up helping the mortgage companies that are sitting on bad debt. Now, a lot of the problems are, is these people with bad mortgages, there's, you know, they're in the hole where their mortgage is maybe, let's say, $400,000, and it might be an exaggeration, but the house is only $200,000 now. So there's a $200,000 difference between what they could sell the house for and what they owe on it.
Right.
So if we take $200,000 as the average, some people would be more, some people would be less, and you take that and you instead apply this bailout money to that, to helping these homeowners split the difference, applying the money to them refinancing.
But didn't our government originally say they were going to do something to help these people?
Well, they still haven't. That's just it.
Well, here's the problem, okay? I agree that there is some need to help these people. Some of these people knew what they were getting into. And
right, but still.
Is it right to give money to a guy who borrowed 115% to buy a place knowing that in 3 years' time he might not be able to keep it?
Also, on the other hand, we're saying we're going to go ahead and take care of the golden parachutes of all these other companies. We're giving them the, you know, which is the worst criminal here?
Yeah, the crooks.
Well, you have to remember that if these companies all falter, everybody suffers.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely.
And so that's why I say you can't not do so. You can't let it go, because if the banks all all these investment banks shut down, there's no one running the global economy. There's no money going around. And we go back to a system of barter and mom and pop trading chickens for baked beans or whatever, you know?
But if you take this money and you use it with the homeowner to convert their bad paper to good paper, isn't that essentially doing the same thing?
Well, yes and no, because what's going to happen is those same people who you've basically helped out, that money goes back to the banks, right? In
yes.
theory, assuming you'd give it directly to the banks and not to the people, because a lot of them will just waste it on something else.
Yeah.
But you give it to the banks. The banks are now whole. These people are still in the hole on a mortgage they can't afford because rates are up.
No, because the new mortgage would be on the reduced value of the house.
You want to refinance everyone's mortgage based on that?
Well, refinance everyone's mortgage that is in trouble based on what is now the value of the house because of the fall in house prices. And the money from the government would...
Yeah, but so you're still bailing out the banks. You're not helping the people as much. The people are going to be fine.
But if we bail out these banks and the government suddenly owns their bad paper, they still owe on mortgages that are higher than the value of their home.
It won't work that way. You can't do it that way, because basically all you're doing is you're giving these people a chance to keep going,
But you're giving two people a chance to keep going, the banks and the homeowners.
It won't work. there's too many out there to do, first of all.
Okay, all
right. Second of all, how do you decide the amount? Banks will still be losing money on a lot of them. Some of these homes are still going to be ridiculously undervalued, and they're not going to be able to deal with it. Not undervalued. The value will come down too much. It's going to be too big of a drop. The banks are still going to lose a lot of money that way.
4 months ago, I found an article on Forbes. They believe in this. I'm sure it's different now, but there are 1.7 million homes facing foreclosure and 2.1 million homes in danger of foreclosure.
Right.
But if we take that $200,000 average and we apply that to the $700 billion, that provides a cushion for 35 million mortgages.
Except that you'd have to look and see. I'll bet you a large portion of those are higher than a $200,000 deficit, and they're still going to be in foreclosure.
I just took $200,000 as...
Whatever the case is. I mean, you have to remember that a lot of these things, it's going to be a much bigger number, and so your $700 billion may escalate up to like $1.3 trillion before you even get close to helping people.
No, I don't think it'll be that high, but I just think
I'm throwing a number out, but I mean, there's you'd have to look at every single mortgage and see the numbers, and then you have to somehow figure out how to do it. And so the people who took a bigger risk and got more hurt are going to get screwed anyway. So you're not really helping everybody. You're just helping some.
Wait. Let me play devil's advocate here, or conspiracy master at AboveTopSecret.com here. What the hell's the government doing buying, you know, private companies in the first place? I mean, I understand the bailout. I understand everything both of you guys are saying and Johnny, whatever he's throwing in. But what bothers me is the government buying a private company and becoming a mortgager. That's what bothers me.
Well, the government's not going to keep them. The government, what my understanding is what they're doing with AIG is they will slowly break these companies up and piecemeal sell them out to recoup the investment.
And the same thing with these securities. They're eventually going to sell them. They'll sell them at a loss.
Right. So they're not going to actually start running companies. God help us if they start actually running companies.
Yeah.
You have no idea. They can't run a country. They can't run a company.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, one of the things...
Okay, so you're saying they're just...
Although, Ross Perot said you could, but...
So you're saying they're doing this to bring stability, supposedly, and to curb the fears of the American public... Until they figure out the right thing to do. In other words, it's like a fire sale, right?
No. A fire sale. Take AIG, for example. AIG needed $85 billion, or they were going to basically just have to sell off their divisions and sell off their assets at any price. That's a fire sale. With the government stepping in and saying, we got your 85, we own whatever percentage it was that they were getting for it, we'll sell you now. And now, because the company doesn't need to unload at any cost, they can slowly sell out different pieces and divisions and assets and avoid a major global catastrophe.
Well, so is this a good thing or a bad thing? That's my question.
Well, it's a good thing that they're doing it the way they're doing it. It's not a good thing that they're doing it with whoever they feel like doing it with.
I was just going to say, that to me is one of the parts of this plan that I don't necessarily agree with, which is that they can then turn around with this property or this debt and then turn around and sell it to whomever they please.
Well, you have to look at both sides of it. Are they going to now say, well, let's sell it to these companies because we're invested there? I would imagine they're going to put some kind of...
You don't think that these companies that are going to be taking advantage of this are not going to step right back up later on and buy pennies on the dollar the company that they just lost?
No.
Oh, there's going
no,
to be
and the end result really is that the individual people won't be destroyed by it. If they just started letting these banks fold, and I think what they're worried about at this point are the smaller banks. The way I've been reading is there's something like 150 smaller banks that they're concerned about. Those 150 smaller banks close, the FDIC may actually have to start paying out to everybody on those insured accounts, and they may run out of money.
I'm going to have to bow out. The throbbing in my jaw requires another dose of self-medication, but I just want to leave with one thought. These are the people that screwed it up in the first place. I just don't think we can trust them to fix it.
I'm going to agree with you on that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to carry on with Steve-O, so we'll let you go, Bill. We'll talk to you.
We hope you feel better, Bill.
Yeah, feel better, man.
I hope so, too.
Yeah, soldier on, brother. Soldier on. Johnny and I were kind of doing a text message. It's real tough when you got four people to sit there and ramrod, if you will. Okay, let's get back on this thing, Steve-O.
Nice choice of words.
I know. But listen, before we go any further, a lot of people that are members of AboveTopSecret.com haven't a clue of what you really do. Now, you don't have to give any specifics, but give them what your credentials are so they won't just think, well, that's just that stupid moderator. You're more than a stupid moderator. You're our stupid moderator.
Oh, God. Last time you were on, he called you a tool.
A stupid moderator is actually on my resume.
I love that.
But I'm an accountant here in New York City. I have a small practice of my own, and I also am partners with my father, who is slowly retiring. And then I have some side business with other people, but generally I do somewhere in the neighborhood of 500 personal tax returns a year, maybe 150 to 200 corporate returns, and anything that falls on my lap in between.
And so, in other words, you're not a slacker.
No, we're Steven.
I am. Well, I'm in the office at 9:30, and this wasn't planned.
Why?
Contacted me to see if I was around.
Well, that's because Gladys Jean, doesn't answer your phones 24/7. But how many years?
Unfortunately.
So how many years have you been doing this in the New York area, Steve-O?
I think 15, 16, something like that.
Okay. So all right. So that's what I wanted to come out, because I don't want everybody understands that Bill's going to be analytical. But they don't know that much about you other than just
But he's right about a lot of it, and the problem when it boils down to is, and if you take the conspiracy angle aside, the problem that it boils down to is a lot of people don't understand it. And I don't even think the senators all understand it.
Yeah.
And so they're the ones that are reviewing this thing, and it's a little freaky that the people that are trying to resolve this got us here in the first place, or they don't understand it. It's like asking the guys at Enron to fix the problem they created.
Right. They
made that mess to begin with. They obviously at some point went overboard and didn't know how to stop it. So how could you ask them to now get to work and fix it?
And I think the average John and Jane Doe that are homeowners and are having to try to count their pennies to try to just be able to afford gas money to be able to go to work, and put food on their table. When they're looking at this plan, and I watched the C-SPAN and the CNN covering coverage this morning of the whole deal with the bailout proposal and everybody giving their 2 cents worth into it. The one thing that kept running through my head was that the average John and Jane Doe don't give a hoot about the bailout to these large companies. They're still thinking, well, what about us and the
economy? That's all they care about. That's all they should care about. Well, I think that, you know, the way it's been handled, you know, not really necessarily the press, but just the way, and you know, it's sort of pointless, but our president should have spoken at some point to the people when all this was going down, beyond his, you know, sort of passing remarks. Unfortunately, he's a bit of a dolt, so asking him to say anything where nobody trusts him anyway is kind of pointless. But somebody should have stood up and said, it's a problem. We're working on it. Your money is safe. We're trying to avoid everybody being screwed. And nobody's done that. And that doesn't help. It makes the people more paranoid. The majority of my phone calls over the last week and a half have been, is my money safe? Should I be withdrawing my money? I have a client who's account manager at Chase Bank. He said people are walking in with cash from other banks, that they're panicked, that they, you know, they need that FDIC 100,000 insurance there. Everybody's freaking out, and it's not that bad. It could be, but it's not yet. Nobody's saying anything. Nobody's pacifying the crowd. And, you know, it's all stuck to the analysts on these shows, and nobody's really talking to it in layman's terms.
All right, here's a weird thing. Now, I happened to be at my bank, Chase, today. And
yeah, they're folding, by the way. You should get money out.
Well, thanks for that.
No, their bank has been great. The stock has held up real well in all of this.
I think they're in their headquarters in New York.
I don't know, maybe.
Chase Manhattan, yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Anyway, well, that's because it was, it's not Chase anymore. J.P. Morgan Chase.
Yeah, well, who gives a rat's ass? All right.
Obviously, you don't. Okay.
I don't. The point is that I was sitting there waiting to get into a safety deposit box, and
yes.
I'm having a conversation with this guy. And this guy, he and I were kind of talking, and I mean, obviously, I have a hell of a lot less than this guy does. But he said he had some, like, I don't know, $300,000, which is maybe not a lot of money to some of you New Yorkers, Steve-O. But, I mean,
it's a lot of money for anybody.
But it was a lot of money to this guy, evidently. And I said, are you concerned that, you know, if you have $300,000 in Chase, are you concerned, you know, that if something happened, which would have to be catastrophic? I mean, I would think in World War III, if Chase went under, I mean, we're talking, you know, nuclear strikes and we kiss our ass goodbye, it doesn't really matter. But he says, no, he says, I'm not worried. He says, because, you know, if Chase goes under, you know, we'll have nuclear winter. And so I thought, you know, well, that's kind of an interesting thing. So let me ask you, Steve-O, I mean, you know, you have a lot of insider knowledge and crap. Not meant that you're an insider. What about the bigger banks? Wells Fargo, Chase. Is there another one bigger than those two?
Well, it's not so much. Well, first of all, nobody ever thought Merrill or Bear Stearns or any of these other Lehman Brothers would go under. So it's impossible to say anything because you never know what's going to happen. But are they safe? Yeah, I think they're pretty safe. I think that. When Warren Buffett decides to put $7.5 billion into Goldman to help keep the markets going and to keep things calm, it shows you that he thinks it's going to work.
Right.
And, you know, he's pretty much the smartest guy out there, I think, when it comes to this stuff. So, you know, if he's got faith in this, you got to give a little bit of credit there and say, well, maybe they've got something in the basics of it that'll work. Are the banks pretty safe? Yeah, I think so. I have a former Goldman Sachs partner for a client who, and I don't know if this is true, I have not looked it up, but he said that no one has ever lost money on an FDIC-insured account, and that they've never actually lost it all.
Right.
Meaning that if your bank goes under, those holding accounts are usually sold off to another bank, and you get your money back. I don't know if it's true, but it's pretty comforting to know that no one's ever lost money, if it is true.
Right.
I tend to think the guy's somewhat right. He's a pretty smart guy.
Well, you know, earlier you were talking about the small banks. You know, you said there's like 150 maybe small banks. And
I thought I made reference to 150. You know, I thought they made reference today to about 150 banks that they were, quote unquote, concerned about, whatever that means.
All right. Well, you know, in the area where my old company used to be, there was a little small. It was like a two bank, I guess, enterprise. They had one close to where my company was, and then there was another one that was downtown Dallas, I think. But, I mean, that's really what you mean by a small banking thing.
Well, that and a little bit bigger. But you know what happens is that's, you know, it's, I'm trying to think of a local one that you could use for. But, yeah, a bank where maybe there's five total branches in the state, okay. You know, that's a small bank. And they're, you know, I don't think those are the ones that they're concerned about. I think maybe a little bit larger than that. But the ones where they're in an area where they've been lending money and they shouldn't have been, and now they're getting hurt, but someone will buy them. J.P. Morgan Chase will walk in there and say, we'll buy your bank. We can handle it. Or Bank of America will walk in and say, we'll buy it. Don't worry. So I think a lot of these things, you know, they're sort of making the fear worse than it should be.
Right.
And, you know, yeah, it's not great. And, yeah, we should be concerned. But should we be that concerned? I don't think so. I think the smaller banks are relatively safe. And I think that, you know, the way they're trying to set it up, at least for the time being, they're going to figure out a way to not get us into more trouble. And, you know, down the road, who knows, whatever the hell they're going to do. I mean, if they're not going to up front regulate the amount of money these executives can get, we're going to be screwed eventually again anyway.
Right.
And these guys, they're smart guys. Listen, back in the 80s, they screwed around with the savings and loan, and they, you know, they brought the economy to its knees, and they fixed it. And then, you know, the same guys went and found a new way to screw people. And they did it with the mortgages, and they did it back in the tech days, and with phony analysis. And they're constantly finding a way to skirt the system. They'll find another way. We'll rebound from it quickly, or relatively quickly, and they'll find a new way to beat the system. That's all.
Well, I certainly am glad that for the past 3-point-some-odd years, I've been hedging all my investments into gold.
Have you? I just read on the site that gold's going to be at $2,000 an ounce, and the dollar will be worthless. So you should be in great shape. I wouldn't announce that.
Well, I enjoyed.
Figure out where you keep it.
Well, I certainly enjoyed the other day when it jumped up over $100. It had a little bit of a pullback after that, but in amongst the hole that seems to be getting bigger and bigger economically for most people. In fact, Dave, I'm sure you'll back me up on that. Since we've started the ATS mix, what one commodity have I been pushing?
Prostitutes.
Thank you very much. Outside of that one.
Oh, gold.
Thank
Sorry.
You. Jeez.
More prostitutes.
Yeah, that's what I should have said.
I wonder how that economy is doing.
You know, Johnny, there's a little bit of a problem with gold when you amass too much.
And?
You got to watch it, and you got to carry it with you, and it's heavy.
Mine's buried in a cave.
Well, you and a certain friend of yours in the desert can do that.
A nameless, and it's not
the nameless.
Bell.
The nameless one.
This doesn't have anything to do with a rowboat, does it?
Who else would associate with an anonymous one?
No rowboat talk. One.
Well, listen, hey, time will tell if all the optimism that Stephen has about this whole deal happening.
Cautious optimism.
Okay, that's good.
Cautious optimism.
All right. But I know that there are other things going on in the world and also at ATS that are of interest to all of us. And I would like to just point our attention to one particular thread, and then everybody can chime in with some of the ones that they think are some of their favorites right now. But one that completely blew me away came from none other than my partner, Dave Rabbit, who poured his soul out to the public here with a thread topic I thought he would never, ever do, and it was on religion. And he poured out his soul, and apparently a lot of people enjoyed finding out a little bit about the other side of the rabbit zone, that there is a soul inhabiting the rabbit. And it's come out to be with over 248 replies or something like that, and scads of flags. And Dave, I thought I would just kind of toss it to you there with that little segue intro, and you could kind of tell everybody a little bit about what prompted you to create this thread and some of the more memorable things that you've had because of creating this thread.
Well, I tell you what's really weird about this, and Steve-O, I know I told you this, I think, privately in the YouTube or something. You know, what really blows me away about this thing is I started this thread because of something that happened at a restaurant. Now, I didn't say this publicly, but I told our cosmic. You know, Mark always says, don't tell anybody what the name of the place is where we all meet. Anyway, I told the people in
Cosmic. That's an acronym, by the way.
That's right.
For those of you playing along. Have fun figuring it out. Go ahead, sorry.
If you spell it backwards, what does it spell backwards?
K-O-S-M-I-K. Go figure it out.
What is it? K-M what?
K-O-S-M-I-K. First one to figure it out gets 1,000 points.
Cosmic.
Okay, now let Dave go.
I would have to write that down. I can't do it that fast. Okay, well, anyway, I'm sitting in a Mexican restaurant, and I'm having a margarita and some Mexican food, and the place is really crowded. I mean, it's maybe 150 people in there. I'm just sitting there by myself eating my dinner, and I look over, and there's this young couple sitting there. He reaches across the table. It's like they're facing each other. He reaches across the table, grabs the young lady's hand, wife or girlfriend, whatever, and they begin to pray. Now, I've been watching but I've been sitting there close to where they're at, and they've had like 4 rounds of drinks, okay? And then they start going to this prayer thing. And this is right before the bartender brings them their 5th round of drinks, and they're drinking margaritas. And then he brings their food. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, that is absolutely ludicrous. I mean, here they are. You know, they're going to be drunk. I mean, if they're not already drunk, they're going to be drunk. And they're praying, you know, for their food, I guess. It's coming in between their 5th and 6th rounds of margaritas. So I don't know, there's something about that image that just kind of blew me away. And so Johnny and I have on many occasions, and he won't admit it because he doesn't admit things, but Johnny and I have talked, you know, on threads about faith and stuff. And there's a couple of them that we did some months ago, and I really got upset. I mean, I really did. It didn't go on air, but it was something that was off air private between Johnny and I. And I mean, honest to God, truth, and Johnny probably will admit this since I'm talking about myself. You know, I got so upset that I really was crying to a degree. And I told John in a real broken up voice that, you know, I said, I just wish I could have faith again. Because I really felt at the time real vulnerable because of this thread topic that we did. So anyway, fast forward now, I decide, okay, well, maybe if I could find out what other people really feel and not have it be a flame fest. Maybe I'll start an article. And then I wrote it. It took me a long time to write it. And then I had a longer time deciding, do I really want to post this? Because in posting it, I had to be honest about things in my life. And I didn't know if I had the courage to do that. And so I started the thread, and it said, basically, is religion simply a security blanket? And I decided that I was going to ensure that there was no flaming, so I've been literally monitoring this thread 24/7. And as John said, it's really become an amazingly popular thread. But this is the thing that really blew me away, John and Steve, and this is the thing that I think makes me want to do even more things, not necessarily about religion, but things like this, to where I kind of really open up and have a different side of me. And that is the amount of U2Us and encouragement people have given me about opening my soul, if you will, you know? I mean, and talking about things that were never talked about to anybody other than being known by my father, who was deceased, and my mother, who's deceased. I mean, there were some things in there that were very, very personal to me. But when I did that, what absolutely blew me away is people, members of AboveTopSecret.com, were coming in there and telling their own personal stories. My God, this took courage beyond belief. I have never seen a topic in 2 years on this site to where people were opening up about really sensitive subjects without feeling like they were going to be chastised or run down or ridiculed. And, you know, I've never felt...
Can I just add something?
Sure,
I just want to interject something. I think that one of the reasons why this took off so well is because most of the people know you, Dave, as being kind of the comedic relief portion of the ATS Mix show, and this is completely different, a different side. Like I said, you bared your soul. People found out that you had a soul and that you were willing to throw it out there, even though they thought that beforehand that it was taken over by Darth Vader. They found out now that, you know, perhaps there is light at the end of the table or tunnel in your case, or the rabbit hole. And I think people have really appreciated that because it is so unlike you. And I think that the response that we've gotten or that you've gotten because of this thread shows that people want to find out more about Dave Rabbit and the real Rabbit rather than necessarily all the time being 24/7 Dave Rabbit.
Well, you know, a lot of people, as I said, have put their own personal lives on the line here and told their personal stories. But for everyone that said it on the thread itself, even bigger number has sent me U2Us saying they didn't want to put it up on the thread, but because I bared my soul to them, they wanted to tell me their story. And I cannot tell you. I mean, there's several that, I mean, so blew me away of what happened in their life that made them either more religious or less religious or agnostic or atheist or, you know, gung-ho, really religious. There were several there that are just absolutely heart-wrenching stories that have been told to me. And I guess it's the trust factor, you guys, that really blew me away. I mean, they trusted me that much to bear their soul privately to me, and yet they still trusted me enough to sit there and confide something that they wouldn't put up on the site, but they would tell me. And I can't tell you how great that made me feel.
So now we're going to have to address you as Father Dave Rabbit Guiducci.
I was going to say the same thing. It's a confessional booth.
Oh, you
should put a little jar out front of them, you know, to donate to the Church of Dave.
Well, I just put a can of
Church of Rabbits.
Yeah, right. Empty cans of bush beans. I don't know what it is. I mean, you know, I tell you, it's kind of like Mark told me one time when we were talking about interviews and stuff, and Johnny is to me an excellent interviewer. I mean, he's very intelligent, he's very precise, and you know, he's just really he holds his own with anybody that we've ever had as a guest, bar none. There's no question. I don't even come a candle close to that. But I've always had a knack to be able to be comfortable with anybody, whether it be a presidential candidate, whether it be a movie star, whether it be a rock star, or whether it be whoever. And I just have always felt very comfortable. It's never bothered me to stand up in front of 10,000 people or 5,000 people or 3,000 people and talk to them. I mean, it's never bothered me. And it's that comfort level. Maybe it's the comfort level. Now, maybe it flows over a little bit in the way I write things, because I kind of want to make people feel like they experience what I'm trying to say to them. At the same time, I don't want them to feel like they can't, you know, feel like they can give back that same scenario. Does that make sense to you guys at all?
Yeah, I think that a part of it, you know, a part of it comes from people get to know you after listening to you for as long as you've been doing the show, and you're not just some guy on the site anymore. You're a friendly voice, and I think that's somewhat relaxing for people. I think also there is an aspect of anonymity on the site. Even though you know their name on the site, you don't really know them. And sometimes people put something up there, and it touches a nerve, and everybody's willing to post. We had that maybe at the beginning of the summer, and I don't remember who put it up. I want to say Nevermore, where something about, you know, does anyone else get that feeling that things aren't right? And there were like 10,000 posts in it.
Wow.
And it was people pouring their hearts out and people, you know, talking about it. And it was, you know, these horrifying stories of people suffering monetarily or whatever. And, you know, you're writing, you're like, you know, how could you just go and put that out there? And for whatever reason, people, certain things touch a nerve and people want to talk.
I'll tell you somebody else that seems to have the same type of flow of being able to touch a nerve. And that is one of our moderators.
Gene.
One of our Gladys June, one of our moderators in Below Top Secret, who posts regularly in there, by the name of Lombozo. Every time he posts one of his stories, it is gut wrenching and just touches my heart like you would not believe. And you can tell that whatever he is relating to everybody is coming from the heart. And that, and I have a feeling that, and I've never met the gentleman, but I have seen photographs, and I understand that he's a quite large gentleman. Is that not correct, Steve?
Yeah, but he's not quite large as in big fat guy. He's just
six. Right,
he's
exactly.
He's a giant of a man.
But
he's a big giant teddy bear, actually.
It's
exactly.
Like Brad,
I was just going to say
Brad
that
Garrett. He kind of like a Brad Garrett.
Yeah, he's just a big guy.
Right, right.
But here's a gentleman who, even though he may seem to be rather imposing visually, is able to wear his heart and soul on his wrist and be able to relate that in a typed word form in a post at AboveTopSecret.com. And that's one of the things that I've always appreciated about anything that he posts, because you can tell right away that it does come from the heart.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. He does have that ability. And you know what happens is people like that, they develop a little bit of a following.
Yeah.
And people, you know, sort of, I don't like to use the word stalking, but they stalk him. They watch where he's posting and they see what he's writing about. And, you know, they're interested. They can relate, or they just find it funny, or, you know, or they hate it.
Right.
And they just want to see what else he's going to say that'll piss them off, you know. Although with him it's usually not the case. But, you know, you find that if you follow certain more prevalent posters on the board, you'll see that there's always a few people that are right behind them posting either in agreement, disagreement, or if it's BTS, sort of with them feeling it and understanding it. It's, you know, it's a little bit of a phenomenon that you can really sort of watch and see who's going to post where, you know?
So anyway, Dave, now that you've bared your soul here, you know, you obviously do know and understand that people are going to expect to hear and experience more of this side of Dave, don't you?
Oh, sure. Well, you know, but and that was my dilemma, John, honestly. You know, I mean, you know me as well as anybody, you know. That was my dilemma. By posting the thing, I completely
opened Pandora's box.
Exactly. Thank you. That's exactly what I knew I was going to do, because everybody had a perceived concept about me. I mean, you know, I mean, I don't get a lot of negative UTUs, but I've had my share, you know, going on 100 shows.
Mostly from Steven and I.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, and Mark and Bill and Abe and some of the other people. But I'm in, of course, all the Cosmic Buddies. But, you know, I'm trying to figure the best way to say this. When I wrote this thing out, I had no clue
what path it was going to lead you down.
Exactly. That, thank you for filling in the gaps for me, John.
Former minister, sorry, I have to fill in the blank sometimes.
Well, you know, because I have never portrayed myself, and you know, John, I've always professed myself to be an agnostic, you know,
right.
And I still, as I sit here, am agnostic. You know, I don't buy everything that the religious community has ever said. I mean, I grew up Catholic, was around Catholic. You can read the story if you want to go to the thread and read my own personal gut-wrenching, open my heart up, and here I am story, and I'm not going to go again, but, you know, the thing about it is that these were things that were really inside of me that really, up until I put it all on paper, if you will, where it's kind of carrying this kind of aggravation. It's kind of like a burr under the saddle, okay? It doesn't hurt, but it's aggravating. And so I really felt like I had cleansed my soul, if you will. I'm not kidding you. If I had a dollar every time I said, do I really want to do this, and then answered myself, no, I don't, I'm either going to – one of two things is going to happen. This is what I figured. One of two things is going to happen. Either it was going to strike a nerve and people were going to open their souls back to me.
Or it was going to strike out.
Or I was going to strike out and it was going to go down in flames and it was going to be – and I was going to be the most embarrassed person on planet Earth. And I mean, that was – you're talking about flying without a net? That was really flying without a net. I have never flown without a net emotionally like I did putting this article up.
Well, I think I can speak for all our listeners and guests and members at AboveTopSecret.com that got a chance to read your thread, and if not, we would encourage everybody to do so. I think people really did appreciate that, Dave, and I think you should feel a little bit more comfortable in doing that more often. And with that said, I would like to just turn back over to Stephen here. Stephen.
Yes.
Obviously, there are some interesting hot topics and threads that have kind of garnered your interest outside of the one that Bill started off with us all talking about. And perhaps you might want to share some of the things that have kind of caught your interest here in the past week or two.
Okay, well, I did something I swore I'd never do, and I got involved in a 9/11 thread. I regret it, and I don't even want to talk about it. It was such a horrible experience. And I figured after all these years, maybe there'd be a little bit more intelligent conversation going on. But no, it's really more of the same. I'm saying this, you're saying that. I'm saying this, you're saying that. Round and round. There's a term for that. It involves a circle, and we'll leave it at that. I then stupidly got involved in a Billy Meyer thread. I apologize for that to myself and anyone.
Well, you're picking all the winners this time, aren't you?
I'm working so hard these days that I don't have a lot of time to really, you know, scour the site for stuff, and I'm just basically picking things that are right on top and reading them, and I'm an idiot, I guess. But one thing I did see, which I haven't really been able to follow up too much on, yes, the Phillies just lost, and the Mets are now about to maybe blow the game. Sorry. Johnny, I told you I was going to get stuck with that. Sorry.
Folks, he's multitasking today.
Oh, that's one out. Good. Yeah, no, the Mets were about to blow another game. Anyway, I'm sorry. One thing I did notice, and it is sort of related to what's going on in the financial arena, is that someone had posted that a guy called the September 15th market crash back in, I think, July, a guy by the name of Reinhardt, who was on either the Google or Yahoo message boards. And, you know, I always find that interesting when someone off of our site accurately predicts something like that. And I'm not talking about somebody who claims they saw something in the sky and, you know, 2 weeks later or whatever. I'm talking about a guy who just randomly said the market's going to crash on the 15th of September, and it does. That's pretty impressive. And in looking into it, I thought you'd find a guy who just happens to really know the markets well. But no, this guy actually believes that it's all tied to the church, Dave, and that somehow this is a church conspiracy where it's going to lead to war, among other things. But he gives a timeline of church-related market crash or economy crash incidents. And, again, I haven't really followed it fully enough because I've been too busy. But to me, that's something that's pretty interesting because it takes a serious situation right now, and he's linking it back a few hundred years. Hmm. Kind of impressive.
Wow.
Oddly enough, he's not on our site yet. We'll get him.
Yeah.
AboveTheSecret.com.
Of course.
If you're listening, Reinhardt.
Well, speaking of predictions, one of the ones, and I think we can pretty much rule out here, at least for the next couple hours. At the time of our doing this recording, folks, it is on a Tuesday evening. It is almost 7 p.m. PST time, my area. And, Stephen, it is,
4 minutes to 10.
Yeah, 4 minutes to 10. There was a thread that was posted up, and I believe it said something like, hear ye, the end of the world, September the 22nd or 23rd.
It said the world will end tomorrow, but it was like a week ago that thing went up.
Right.
I think. Well, hold on. I can check that for you.
Yeah,
it's a pretty active thread.
I have it up right now. It says, hear ye, the world ends tomorrow.
What's the first date?
There will be a dual terrorist attack on the U.S. and the United Kingdom taking the form of fire from the heavens on September 22nd or 23rd. The U.S. arm of the attack will hit West Side Midtown, Manhattan, producing a man-made mushroom cloud rising from the Hudson River, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, and so that was another reason why I wanted to have you on, Stephen. I wanted to just...
Just in case?
Yes, I wanted to just make sure.
Nice.
You could give us a play-by-play.
We want to be like a CNN guys.
Yeah.
Well, Johnny,
you
have heard
me? The idiot who's still on the phone? You want me to be that guy?
Yeah.
I'll tell you guys a funny story. About a year ago, we had something on the site. I think it was about a year ago. A guy named Ghost Raven posted some nonsense on the site. And Springer spoke to some people, and, you know, the government apparently was concerned because this guy was doing something or something, who knows what, you know. And I was in the middle of, you know, raising the financing for the company, and I'm sitting here, and it's a sunny, you know, summer day, and he's telling me that, like, there's this major terror threat, and it involves a suitcase, and they think that this Ghost Raven thing might be involved. And I'm sitting here, and my brother-in-law, who works right down the hall, says to me, dude, the bomb squad's out on the street.
Oh, right.
And I look, I go, Mark, I got to call you back. I look out the window, and there's literally a bomb robot and a guy in the bomb gear going to explode a suitcase right around the corner from my office.
Wow.
So when I hear these things, you know, I always like to laugh because, you know, I find it all to be somewhat alarmist and nonsensical, and it's up there with, you know, the shelf is going to collapse and we're going to have a tidal wave in New York or a comet's going to hit us. But whenever I hear the terrorist things now and it's New York, no matter how ludicrous it sounds, I'm always looking over my shoulder.
Well, you know what's really funny? Well, yeah, go ahead, Steve.
The next time you talk to Mark, you can ask him about that, how I hung up on him. And when I called him back, he was like, dude, is everything all right? I'm like, no, they're blowing stuff up outside my building. Don't call me anymore.
Well, you know, I tell you, I was just, as we were clicking around trying to find this and that, I saw one, and I've kind of looked at it. I'd like to get your guys' comment on the thing. And it's called America Has Jumped the Shark. Now, when I first read this thing, and it's gotten some pretty good participation in the thing, but when I first read this thing, I immediately thought of the Fonz jumping the shark on Happy Days.
Well, that's where that expression came from.
Exactly. So I kept saying, well, what is it? And I just want to, just this three or four line thing, I just wanted to, and of course, this guy has done self-nipped. And who is this by? ST2099. And he does his own self-snips. I don't think a mod did the snips. Well, maybe a mod did. Let me look down here and see if he did. Nope, he self-snipped himself. Oh, okay.
Well, usually when they do that, they're smart enough to know that if they try and get around the sensors, another mod is going to go in and do it. So they put the snip there, and they get their point across.
Okay, so I'm going to put the snip in here, but you know, I'm think it's the F word. I'm not sure.
It's, well, we could play, what was that, Mad Libs? Remember Mad Libs where you read it and you say blank and then you fill in your own word?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Well, yeah, same thing.
Shall I say blank and then later people put their own nasty word in there?
Sure.
I love that. Okay, here we go. Hey, America, you're blanked. That's right. You're blank with a capital blank. I don't know what else to say to you at this point besides I'm sorry or my condolences. I think America has finally jumped the shark over the weekend. And, I mean, they're basically talking about exactly what we've been talking about, and that's the financial bailout and stuff. But, I mean, and then they're talking about the Barack Obama and John McCain and all this other stuff. So I got to ask you, Steve, and I mean, the reason why I brought this thing in here is because, you know, how many times do you think Hillary Clinton's going to jump the shark before Bill jumps in there and does some behind-the-scenes thing? I saw him on Letterman last night, which was last night compared to when we recorded this. Did you guys happen to listen to
it? I watched it.
No, I was working. Sorry.
I'm glad
that you're enjoying good TV shows.
All right. Bill Clinton's on TV last night with David Letterman. And I don't know. And I'm not necessarily saying that I've ever been a Bill Clinton person. Although, you know, I mean, I kind of, his stock really went up for me with the Monica Lewinsky thing. But I mean, other than that, you know, the thing that I think intrigues me about Clinton is he comes across as extremely intelligent. I mean, Johnny, is that the way he strikes you when he was talking with Letterman last night?
I don't know if intelligent is the right word, but let's say this.
Savvy?
How about this?
Charismatic.
Yeah, exactly. Charismatic, and he does know how to verbally present whatever he is talking about.
Yeah.
I was very impressed with what he had to say. I mean, and he's talking about, Steve-O, he was really saying a lot of the same things that you told Skeptic. Well, that's basically what Letterman was saying, was it not, Johnny?
No, not Letterman, but Clinton.
Well, I know, but Letterman,
so Letterman was saying to give it to the people instead of giving it to the company.
Yeah, Clinton was coming back and taking Steve's.
To me, the funniest thing, and Steve, I'm sorry, did you say you have or haven't watched it yet?
No, I haven't. I haven't seen it, and I won't be seeing it because that's not a show I tape.
Okay, well, perfect. Well, the great thing is here Clinton went through this whole presentation explaining the ins and outs and the catch-22s and the ups and downs, the sideways and everything. And then Letterman, he's been sitting there, you know, very composed and everything. He goes, I didn't understand a word you said. And it was just great because, you know, here he had done this great delivery and everything.
Yeah. Oh,
10-minute long delivery, and then Letterman comes back with that. And Clinton starts going, really? And he goes, no, really, I didn't understand it. So he tried to simplify it for Letterman, and then he goes, oh, okay, now I know what you're talking about.
It's a Letterman tactic.
Yes.
To play like an idiot. But the truth is, one of the things about Clinton that is good, and I'm not a huge fan of his, but when he talks, he's talking to the common people. He's not talking to the CEOs and the executives and the guys who understand all this stuff. He's talking to everybody. And that's part of the charisma.
I think Letterman actually leaned a little bit towards it because he asked him if it upset him, that Hillary wasn't elected over, Gargle Snarp. And, they were friends with him and all this other stuff. Who's the second command now? What's the guy's name?
Cheney?
No.
Biden?
Biden. Senator Biden. Sorry, Senator. I didn't mean to call you Gargle Snarp. But anyway.
is that a bedroom name or is that something that you just made up?
It's something I just made up.
It's from the Funk and Davables.
I couldn't remember the guy's name. Okay, it doesn't matter. But
I think he should go with Gargle Snarp.
Gargle Snarp. Sounds like a great cartoon.
You know, if you didn't use that on this show, I would have signed up with a sock puppet with that name.
That's
Gargle Snarp. Breathe.
Sorry, I'm going to have to get that sack here in a second for my sock puppet. All right, but this is this is the thing I was talking about with Biden, though. I mean, he was asking him point blank if it upset him that Hillary wasn't chosen as vice president. And I think Bill Clinton, he responded is how I thought he would respond. He's on national TV, huge audience. He's not going to sit there and go, it chapped my ass. So, I mean, he gave the politically correct thing. But do you think, Steve-O, I mean, you're a New Yorker. I mean, you're up there in Hillary country. Do you think that there was any thought given whatsoever on a coup at the Democratic convention?
I don't know what the hell she was thinking. She's hated in New York by most people. And apparently her own party despises her at this point for sticking it out as long as she did. I don't know what she was trying to prove. I really don't. By staying in as long as she did, she ruined any chance of him picking her as a running mate. And she makes no sense to me. I got to be honest. I've met her. Her offices used to be in my building when she ran for senator.
Really?
Yeah. I used to hate being stuck with the Secret Service tying everything up. Not that that has any impact on anything. I think she happens to be one of these people that just shows up at the right time for a photo op. I'm not really sure what she's done for the state, to be honest. So I've never been a big fan of hers, although I did get invited. A friend of mine is an elected official out on Long Island, and he invited me to a fundraiser. I went because it was a Bon Jovi concert in a really rich guy's backyard.
Oh.
But it was on her behalf, so I went for the concert. I don't even like Bon Jovi. I just thought it was kind of cool.
Oh, you told me privately you love Bon Jovi. But, here's a...
I love him biblically.
Living on a prayer.
All right, well, I'm going to take you to task, Steve-O, but I'm going to take you to task because you just made a statement that confuses me.
Yeah.
I got to take you to task on this, Steve-O, because you made a statement that confuses me. You said everybody in New York hates her. Then who the hell's electing her?
Everybody else.
Well, I mean, who you mean everybody else?
No, well, who is electing her? You mean in the state of New York?
Yes.
How did she get elected? It's a freaking miracle. I have no idea. She was hated when she was running. People didn't like her, but she was running against Giuliani at one point before he stepped down. And he was sort of on the outs. People don't realize this outside of New York, but New York's mayor was not really well-liked right before 9/11.
So it was like, who do we go for, the worst of two evils?
And this is going to sound awful, and I don't mean it in the way it's going to come out, but 9/11 was a great thing for him. Because without it, he'd have been tossed out. He wouldn't have won the election against her. He was like a lame duck. Nobody wanted him there anymore.
Now, may I say something real quick? I want to
hang on. Hang on one second.
Hang on.
No, I'm sorry.
He's at the office, Dave.
Cleaning crew is here. It's so late. I was telling him to turn off the vacuum.
Cleaning crew my ass. Okay. Anyway. All right. Well, there's one other one I want to talk about that I saw. I think it's on the hot. Let me see if it's on the hot. But I thought this was kind of amazing, and obviously it's very true. It says school suspends boy for wearing an anti-Obama shirt. When I click on the snippet, this is basically what it says, and I want you guys to give me your take on the damn thing. It shows a picture of his shirt, and it says, and it's like the kid did this himself. It says, Obama, a terrorist best friend. It says, Dax Dalton, a 5-year-old student at Aurora Elementary School in Colorado, wore this shirt to school on a day where students were asked to wear something red, white, and blue. Now, he wrote these words in red, white, and blue, so that's where he got his red, white, and blue. It says the school gave this kid an ultimatum: turn the shirt inside out or he would be suspended. They're taking away my right of freedom of speech. Now, this is a five-year-old, it says year five, so he's not 5 years old. He's like the fifth grade, I guess. What do you mean by year?
He's 11.
Yeah, he's 11. Okay.
He's 11. He's not
five. He says, you cannot take away my freedom of speech. Now, his parents aren't standing around him when he's telling them this. He says, if I have the right to wear this shirt, I'm going to use it. If the only way to use it is to get suspended, then I'm going to get suspended. And then the parents arrive, and they describe him as a proud... The kid is a proud conservative. Come on, give me a break. I mean, how much is too much when it comes to things like this, Steve?
All of it is too much. All of it. It's all ridiculous at this point. But this is what people are concerned with. This thing is garnering all this attention because some kid made a shirt that said a terrorist best friend. It's pointless. It has nothing to do with the election. However, it's up there and it's more important than the issues threads that are started. It's a joke. But more importantly, have you been to the site that article came from?
Right, MSNBC.
Check out the picture of the boy and the shirt.
Right,
because
yeah.
On our site, it just shows the shirt.
Right, exactly, yeah.
That's the biggest damn shirt I've ever seen.
Well, yeah.
How big is the kid?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's probably his dad wore it, and then he decided he was going to wear it to school or whatever.
You think his dad made that up and walked around in it?
I don't know, because, the writing's pretty poor. I mean, it does look like someone that maybe is a 11-year-old, wrote it, because, I mean...
It looks like an 11-year-old wrote it, but it looks like an 800-pound man would fit in it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it looks like, what's that guy's name, that big heavy guy? What's that big heavy guy's name?
Rush Limbaugh?
Just kidding.
Wait a minute. What did Steve-O say? I missed that.
You'll have to rewind to hear it a second time. I'm not repeating it.
Oh, is that something we could get in trouble with?
Just me.
Okay.
Just me.
Okay.
Okay. I'm just kidding.
I know you're just kidding.
In all honesty, should the kid have been suspended for it? No.
Right.
Should it be on the news? No.
Yeah.
Who the hell cares?
Well,
it's ridiculous. This is the problem with our election process. This is what they focus on.
It seems like every time you turn around, they're always coming up with some kind of scenario or some kind of deal to where they find the most outrageous thing they can, and that's what makes the news. You know, that's what blows me away about it. I guess it really shouldn't. You know, I guess
it
really
shouldn't. You know, the other day the Yankees played the last game at Yankee Stadium ever. It's being torn down. Right? It was Sunday night. Right?
Yeah, I saw that on the news, yeah.
The first 20 minutes of the news was dedicated to that. This Sunday, after Friday's big announcement of a $700 billion possible bailout, that was on the news for 20 minutes before they spoke about anything else. People don't care about what's important.
Yeah.
They just want to be fed things that interest them. So a little boy with a giant shirt that says a terrorist best friend gets suspended is important, but what are two candidates are actually going to do or plan to do or would like to do to solve the economic crisis we're in is ignored. I mean, has McCain even said anything about it yet? I know Obama said something that made no sense, but has McCain even said anything? Or is he still too busy explaining to Sarah Palin what exactly being vice president means?
Send those
and to all of you Republicans out there, I hate both sides.
And above network.
So don't get upset about it. You know, the thing that gets me is that, and I don't know if it's just timed with my involvement on the site or if it really is getting progressively worse, but the elections and the process have become almost comical over the last few rounds. You know, there was a point where they actually debated and talked about stuff, and then it just became about, well, he's a moron, that guy's an idiot, he blew this up, he didn't blow that. I mean,
right.
It's gone from being somewhat about the issues to avoiding them at all cost.
Yeah.
And, you know, and now, and I saw this, I think Biden said something about Obama did something that he, you know, he criticized Obama or something, and they were saying that, you know, he criticized an ad about McCain being out of touch and how it was wrong. And someone in the Republican Party did the same thing about McCain. I mean, when your own party is telling you that your commercials are terrible, don't you think something's wrong?
Well, is the election the 5th or the 15th of November?
I was told there'd be no math in this interview. And if you could tell me who said it and who he was playing it on what show, I'll be impressed.
Okay, there November. Okay. The first Tuesday is the 4th. So the election is November 4th. Okay, here we are coming up on October 4th pretty shortly. So, I mean, we're talking about just less than a little bit over 4 weeks, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't.
God.
God,
aren't
I cannot.
You, aren't you guys as excited for it to be over as me?
Oh, well, hell yeah. But, you know, I mean, does that really blow you away, though, Stephen, when you stop and think about it, that somebody's going to make a decision on who is going to run the country for the next 4 years in less than 30 days or approximately 30 days?
Yeah, it's a little frightening. But yeah. I think Jon Stewart, it's the only thing I saw from the Emmys the other night. Jon Stewart put it best when he said he's very excited for a new administration. He said, I don't even care who it is. I'm just excited for a new administration.
Yeah. Oh, did you like Rickles? I loved Rickles.
I was just going to say,
all I saw was Jon Stewart accepting his award.
Speaking of the Emmys, and thank you, Dave, for segueing this, but outside of Rickles and possibly Colbert and Stewart doing their little shtick,
I thought
that was the worst.
It was terrible.
Emmy award show I have ever seen in the history of any award show.
It was hosted by reality hosts. Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that in and of itself is a joke. I read that Jeremy Piven, when he won for Entourage, got up there and basically made fun of it and said, "So we're just going to go up here for 12 minutes and not talk about anything."
Right.
There's an opening for you.
Yeah. Well, that told you how south it went. I mean, it was terrible. I mean, I agree totally, Johnny. It was absolutely terrible. You know,
I'm not a big fan of award shows in general, just because there's so many boring categories, and I find that
that's why I TiVo'd it this time. See?
Yeah, you fast forward it. Yeah.
Yeah.
The only one I really watch now is the Oscars, and that's only because I do an Oscar pool.
Oh, do you really?
I'll send it to you when I get it this year. A friend of mine is. He's in advertising, and he does it. And the pool itself, the paperwork, is really cool because he puts a lot of effort into it, and he picks a theme every year based on the movies, and it makes it watchable because, you know, you're rooting for, you know, best cinematography and short documentary, you know, cartoon or whatever, right. And it's a lot of fun. I stink at it. I think I came in third place once, and I usually come in the last 10.
Apparently, you like to do these pools quite often, because before we went on air, you had mentioned that you were participating in a pool.
I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about my suicide. But I don't. It's funny. I don't watch a lot of sports. I watch the Mets play. I used to watch the Knicks before they decided to just suck altogether. And I watch football when I can, but I'm not really that into it. And I do the NCAA tournament. A friend of mine does tournaments on some website, and I've been doing them, and I won a decent amount of money the last couple of years from some of them. So this year's football pool, which I have never won before, is up to like $54,000. And it's a suicide pool. You pick a team, and if you win, you go on, and you can't pick them again. If you lose, you're done. And I picked two teams in a row, and I was great. And week three, I was all set to pick the Titans. And my brother-in-law, who's just a dick, can I say that?
Yeah, sure.
He stood over me going, "Don't pick that. Pick New England. It's at home. Miami stinks." And I'm like, "Dude, get out of here. I'm picking the Titans. The Titans are going to crush." And sure enough, I finally let him convince me, and New England got killed. And I was working while it was happening, and I was watching. I have a TV in the other room, and I'm watching it, and I'm going back and forth. And I shoot him an email. There's 15 minutes left in the game, and I think it was like 28-15 or 28-13. And I shot him an email that just said, "I'm losing, thanks." And his response was, "Yeah, that sucks."
But, you know, I tell you...
I'm sorry. But you know, just that sucks.
But, you know what I think people would really be interested in, Steve-O, is to find out that, you're fairly well off. I mean, you come from a not a hugely wealthy family, but, I mean, you're not worrying about your next meal either. Would you like
to... Can I just say that... not necessarily the case. I'm not worried about my next meal, but, leave it at that.
Okay. Well, speaking of your next meal, there's a rumor going around cosmic.
That's K-O-S-M-I-K. Solve the acronym. Go ahead, sorry.
Okay. is Gordon Ramsay y'all's family chef?
Is who?
Gordon Ramsay, your family chef.
Gordon Ramsay is actually the sous chef.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah, Mario Batali is the actual family chef. Johnny, he took over for Paul Prudhomme.
Okay, Johnny, you know Gordon, right?
Intimately.
Yeah, the chef from
Biblically.
Biblically, yes, I know him the biblical way. Yes,
the chef from Hell's Kitchen.
Just from TV. Yes.
Did you know, by the way, that Gordon Ramsay, his secret seasoning is Johnny's seasoning.
Hey, speaking of that, did you know that the Johninator actually put that photo? Did you put that up in Cosmic?
I think
he's put it in a couple of times. I put it in once.
Well, I'd like you to put that damn thing up in the regular.
You should. I think I did. Didn't I?
All right. Maybe what I'll do is I'll put it
up. You know
in
what,
the,
Johnny? You should put up all of them because all what I take, like six of them, your facial expressions
got about
them
six
are
of them.
Hysterical. Let me explain it because nobody knows. But Johnny was off-site in the ranch thing, and he showed up one morning. He restocked us with some supplies. And while he was restocking supplies, he saw a bag of chips. They were like Kurtz chips or something
Tim's,
like that.
Tim's.
Tim's. Tim's chips. And it said, with special Johnny seasoning on it. So we took pictures of Johnny with his special seasoned bag of chips.
Says it right on the bag, Johnny's sauces or something.
No, it's just Johnny's seasoned.
I've saved the bag too. I still have it. I have it in a photo album.
Well, you can refill it and reseason it with your special seasoning. Brings in a whole new term to shake and bake.
Oh, ouch!
Oh, ouch!
We'll edit that out and take two. Go ahead.
And take
now,
two,
we're not editing this crap out. I mean, as long as we don't say the seven dirty words, we're fine. We're good to go.
Meanwhile, I know it's not something that was on the thread, but on the site, but did you guys see that thing about the guy in, I forget where it was, who broke into someone's home, sprinkled seasoning, speaking of, that's where
yes,
you posted it.
That was in
sprinkled
Fresno.
Seasoning and rubbed it all over one guy and then beat the other guy over the head with
Fresno,
a sausage?
Fresno, California.
The hell is that all about?
Oh, I beat him with a sausage or
with
something.
Beat him over the head with a sausage.
And they couldn't find the sausage that? Because a dog ate the weapon.
Here's what I want to know. This is what I want to know. I'm not making assumptions on whether these two guys were roommates or partners or whatever.
Yeah, okay.
I'm just going straight up. You live with another guy, and some dude breaks in, and while you're sleeping, rubs seasoning on one of you and rubs it on you. Doesn't just sprinkle it, he rubs it on you, and then beats the other guy over the face and head with an 8-inch sausage. Who the hell calls that in? Who calls the cops?
And what? You tell 911.
Yeah, and you call 911. Yes, I was just beaten over the head with a sausage, and my partner or friend was just rubbed with salt.
I would love to get I would love to get a copy of that 911 call in.
We got to work on that. You know, that's what we got to work on. My life mission is to get the 911 call.
Members, if we have any members in the California area that have access to being able to get to the local authorities and get a copy of Fresno, California's 911 call.
100,000
the 911 sausage beating call.
It was what was it? The 18th or 19th, I believe, wasn't it?
Something like that.
Yeah.
That's what struck me on that one. It wasn't so much the crime, which is ludicrous, but that somebody actually had the stones to call that in. They weren't humiliated by that.
And did you see the mugshot?
Like, wait a minute. Nothing was stolen.
Yes, right.
This was purely a sausage hate crime. Or something.
Oh, man, I'm telling you, we are going to get so many U2Us. We're going to it's just going to be ridiculous. All right, Steve, I'll listen.
I don't answer them anymore. I'm going to forward them all to Dave. He just seems to like
that's
getting
right.
them.
You know, I've really gotten into it now that they're all complimentary. It's kind of fun.
Yeah
right.
All right, well, listen, Steve, I know it's like 10:30 Eastern there, so we're going to let you go back to your family. And listen, first off, I can't tell you how much we really appreciate you coming in here at the last moment, and you've been a great friend for a long time, and we really enjoy our association with you. And glad
check is in the mail.
Yeah, glad you enjoy your association with us on a random basis.
I say it every time. Anytime you guys want me, just call.
Yeah, that's what the prostitute said too. Okay, see you later.
Thanks, Steve. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. See you later. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Boy, what a great person to bring into the Skeptic Overlord's Skeptic Overview show, and come. It's kind of like, you know, you got a man on first and a man on second and a man on third. You got the bases loaded. Bill has to go because he's got to, refill his bourbon glass or whatever the hell he was doing, trying to numb himself because of his teeth. And we got someone as magnificent as the Krakenator, a.k.a. Stephen Melzer, to step in and
you know,
add
I wonder
his
if he enjoys you always giving out his last name.
Oh, he posted on the site. What do you mean, do I enjoy it? Hell, it's all over the site. You know, I just know how to read. Hell, if I pull the site up 9 times out of 10 just to remember what his last name is.
Ah.
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 Wait a minute. Before we end the show, I just got to say one thing.
All right.
If I you know, I've told you before, you know, we were in our off-air stuff about how you go, you know, you do the ah thing. You know what it reminds me of?
The penguin from Batman.
No. I'll tell you exactly this. When I tell you, you're going to absolutely crack up.
All right.
Or maybe you won't, but I'm going to tell you it cracks me up every time you go, ah.
All right.
You know, it reminds me of the original Muppet movie with Fozzie okay. Bear, you yes. know? And every time Kermit would say something, Fozzie would go, ah.
All righty.
You watch the Muppet movie. You watch the Muppet movie, then watch the Muppet movie, and yes. tell me that you laugh your ass off when you see Fozzie right. going, ah. And okay. every time you do that with a guest, you go, ah. ah. Sorry.
Well, I wasn't aware of that, but.
Say goodnight, Dave.
I'll definitely watch the movie. And
say goodnight, Dave.
Goodnight, Dave.
Good night, Johnny. we're going to run the commercial or we're going to do it live?
Oh, we're running the commercial.
I love that. All right. We'll see everybody.
And before we actually leave, let's tell everybody, just a brief teaser. Join us this Friday and Saturday up in San Jose, Santa Clara way at the Marriott's Hotel for the Bay Area UFO Expo. It's a once-in-a-lifetime type of event that happens every year.
And it's huge. It's huge. It's huge, and you're going to love it. And Johnny and I are going to just have a blast, and we want each of you to experience what we experienced last year.
And if you don't know what we're talking about, listen to this commercial, this fine, lovely commercial Dave just made.
I love this guy.
Hi, everybody. Dave Rabbit here from the ATS Mix Show. And I want to tell you, I've got something that's really fabulous coming your way, and we want each of you to be a part of this experience. Last year, my partner, Johnny Anonymous, and I attended the Bay Area UFO Expo in San Jose, California. This year, the founder of the event, Victoria Jack, invited Johnny and I back again. I can't believe it, neither could Johnny, but it's fact. We are going to be attending the 10th annual Bay Area UFO Expo, this year located in the beautiful Marriott Hotel in Santa Clara, California. Now, it's going to be held this year on September 27th and 28th of 2008. There's going to be all kinds of vendors there. There's going to be all kinds of speakers there. There's going to be all kinds of special featured guests, which I cannot mention because it's top secret. But there's going to be all kinds of things about UFOs, alien encounters, earth mysteries, government cover-ups, and so much more that I just don't have the time to mention. But you can find out more information by going to abovetopsecret.com/forum. Go to the ATS Mix information area, and you'll find a thread that says Meet Dave and Johnny at the Bay Area UFO Expo. Now, for those of you that are members of the abovetopsecret.com family, you have some really special opportunities. Number one, you can ask questions for the guests that are listed there on this particular thread. And number two, and probably more important, is that you will get a chance to win 10,000 ATS points for bringing us a can of Bush beans and being one of the first 10 that do it. So there's a couple of incentives right there. And actually, we're going to actually probably eat the Bush beans, or either that or we'll autograph the Bush beans and give them back to you. And you can sell them on eBay. Now, won't that be fun for everybody? Okay, and then now I'll tell you something else that's really going to be amazing. Johnny and I are probably going to do all kinds of crazy stuff like we did last year, and it's kind of like we were Pac-Man Jones with the Dallas Cowboys. Last year, I thought Johnny and I were going to get absolutely banned for all the shenanigans that we did. I mean, we were going through the expo area with all the exhibitors, and we were singing Edelweiss, and we were getting a group together, and we were doing this and doing that, and we were singing songs, and I don't know how many renditions of Do You Know the Way to San Jose that Johnny and I sang last year, but it was absolutely chaotic fun to the 10th degree. And this year is going to be even better. And I can't wait to meet a lot of you guys and gals out there that are fans of the ATS Mix Show. And as we're approaching our 100th show, I mean, we want to thank each and every one of the 23 million subscribers and fans that we have accumulated in the last year. And if you like more information, as I say, you can go to abovetopsecret.com/forum. Go to the ATS Mix information and find the thread that says Meet Dave and Johnny. You can also go directly to the Bay Area UFO Expo site, which is located at www.thebayareaufoexpo.com. And this is also located on all the different pages. It shows the artwork with all the guests and whatever. So please come join Johnny Anonymous and yours truly, Dave Rabbit, for a weekend of fun on September the 27th and 28th of 2008 at the Marriott Hotel, Santa Clara, California, at the 10th Annual Bay Area UFO Expo. And for those of you that fly in, you fly in through the San Jose International Airport. And the hotel is about 5 minutes away from that location. So, hope to see all of you there. Peace and love, everybody.
ATS Mix from AboveTopSecret.com is over.
You've been listening to the ATS Mix with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous. If you have a comment, suggestion, an opposing view, or would like to participate in a future show of ATS Mix, please contact Dave or Johnny at www.AboveTopSecret.com. The views expressed on ATS Mix do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of the Above Network, LLC, or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening. You may now reattach your tinfoil hat. We'll be right back.